And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO for our live show. We're live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Please remember to visit the website podcastufo.com for past episodes, blogs, and forums. During the show, feel free to participate live in our chat room. And don't forget to like us on our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I am Martin Willis, your host. We don't have Alejandro Rojas with us this week. You know why? Because he and I recorded a full hour of news, and that's on openminds.tv, or you can listen right on our website, which is podcastufo.com. Right in our show notes, we have an MP3 player, and it's an entire hour of news. So no news for this show. The first hour, we have Gerard Artsen coming up. Now, Gerard lives in Amsterdam, so I had to do a pre-record, but don't fear, I will be in the chat room while this is going on live. And the book that Gerard wrote was Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. And a lot of that's based on contactees, and we have, I would say, an interesting discussion about that and some of the contactees' thoughts and theories. Well, about three-quarters of the way in, hour one, we have Grant Cameron coming on. Grant will be at the Experience to Speak coming up in a few weeks, and he has written a book recently, Alien Bedtime Stories. I got to talk to him about that. We're going to be talking about Wilbert Smith and more, and that will go into the last part of hour one and into hour two. Now, we have a lot of new live listeners. I want to welcome you, and that's all due to Art Bell being back. And because of that, I'm getting a ton of email, and I encourage email. And anyone can write me at martin@podcastufo.com. It's kind of funny. Some email comes to me saying they don't like a certain thing that I do. Like, in other words, they don't like the fact that I let guests talk, you know, about what they want to talk about. I don't steer them. And then I have similar emails coming in saying they like that because I don't do that. But everyone has their own style. If you listen to any shows here on the Dark Matter Digital Network, there's some great shows here, and you'll hear everybody has their own style, and I'm definitely not Art Bell. I think he's the best. Again, Alejandro's not on, and he is on vacation next week, so you won't hear him next week either. But I want to thank everyone that supports the show. Now, if you're not listening live and you want to listen to the podcast, all you have to do is go to podcastufo.com. On the sidebar, you'll see you can support the show for only a dollar per month or more. To listen to the entire show, first hour is always free. And, you know, you get a special link that will go into any media player, and it's a cinch to set up an iPhone as well. Now, again, if you're listening live, or if you're listening at all, I appreciate every single one of you. So I've done enough blabbering, and we are ready to get started with our first guest, Gerard Artsen. Again, this is pre-recorded, but no fears, I will be in the chat room. And here we go. All right, I am recording to Amsterdam, actually, right now, with Gerard Artsen. How are you, Gerard?
I'm very well. Thank you, Martin. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you have a book with actually an amazing title, and I was really looking forward to speaking to you. And it's Here to Help, UFOs and Space and the Space Brothers. First of all, I would like to ask you to share your reason for getting interested in this topic. To begin with, I don't care if it goes all the way back to childhood.
Well, it does go back a fairly long way. My background is that of a student of the ACES wisdom teaching. And the Ages Wisdom Teaching is the teaching that have been given since 1875 by people such as Helena Blavatsky from the Theosophical Society, Alice Ann Bailey in the early 19th century, the first half of the 20th century, and later Benjamin Graham. And I had been reading George Adamski's books at a fairly young age, around 18 or 19, and lots of Eric von Däniken's books. But much later in life, I discovered a direct connection between the stories, the information coming from the early contactees and these wisdom teachings in the form of George Adamski's first book, Wisdom of the Masters of the Far East, which he published in 1936. So that was well before his first book about flying saucers. So that's where my interest in the subject comes from. My first publication was a book about George Adamski, A Herald for the Space Brothers. And since writing that, I think I did it in 2010, I came across so much more information from so many other of the early contactees that chimes in with these teachings that are culminating in this time, in the crisis that we see in the world and the changes that we need in the world, that I decided to write Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers.
Wow. Now, we have a regular listener, I'm sure he's going to be listening to this, that actually met George Adamski and a few other of the other George, Van Tassel.
Van Tassel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, he says that they actually admitted directly to him that they were making this stuff up. Have you ever heard that?
I've heard it before, and I think some of the contactees may have made statements to that effect for whatever reason. But I've done so much research, and I've seen so many accounts, including the research from a fellow author from the UK, Timothy Good. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
I've met Timothy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh, yes. And in his book, I believe it's the one called Alien Base, he also writes that there's actually, this was just before the millennium, the change of the millennium, he wrote that at this time, much of George Adamski's information is even more relevant than it was back in the 50s. I have no doubt that what George Adamski had been lecturing on, writing about, speaking about, is exactly what he wanted to convey to the world and what he was asked to tell the world.
All right. So basically, the premise is that you believe that the contact that has been made here has really been set forth into actually helping us, because I breezed through your book, unfortunately, as most of my listeners know, I've been very busy in the last several months. I wasn't able to read through your book totally, but I did skim through it. And the premise is that we're being contacted and being guided along so not to basically destroy ourselves. We are run on greed, all that. Can you kind of explain where this is going?
Yes, and correct, indeed. The people from space, the visitors from space that contacted dozens of people around the world, not just in the United States, but around the world in the 1950s, and since then, the contacts are still continuing, have done so in order to inform humanity to that we need to change our ways. Our economic system, our financial system, our societies are based on a missing piece of information, or rather some ignorance in terms of the spiritual realities of life. They have come to tell us, listen, you are one human race. You all depend on the same planet, and you need to get together. You need to cooperate to solve the problems that you experience at this time in order to survive as a race, as brothers and sisters of the same race. And they offered their help to governments, which was declined. There's several accounts in that respect about space people contacting the United States government, for instance, and offering technology and help, etc., as long as we would abandon nuclear technology. Similar accounts have come from Italy, from people involved in the friendship case. So when those high-level contacts were declined in terms of overcoming the antagonisms between the United States and the Soviet Union at the time, they continued their individual contacts around the world to still get the basic information out. And in my book, I've tried to show that so much of the information from the different contactees corroborates these, their different stories, their various stories. Of course, there's variations in details, etc. But we are always dealing with individual people from different backgrounds, different upbringings, different cultures. One will be religious, perhaps. Another will be more mystically inclined or more scientifically, more academically inclined. So there will be those differences. But it's amazing to see the amount of information that is shared among them. And even more surprising to see, or perhaps not so surprising if you're a student of the wisdom teachings, of the amount of information that they have shared and that that coincides with the teachings of the Ages Wisdom teaching about the oneness of humanity and the need for international cooperation to tackle global problems and creating a system based on sharing and justice rather than competition and greed in order to build a sane and a just society for everyone, not just for people who can afford to buy their freedom or their justice.
Wow. You know, this actually kind of goes along with a lot of the things you hear, that people who claim they've, had an abduction experience of some kind or another, they've seen, visions of a world destroying itself, and this is what is going to happen if we don't stop doing this, all the way to Zimbabwe when there was the 65 school children.
Yes.
All these accounts of people kind of saying along the lines that we have to take care of the planet, and also the strong connection with nukes and all the incidents that have happened with that. So, I understand it. It just seems like there's just too many things of similar cases happening with just disregarding this as nothing. One of the things I wanted to ask you, have you spoken with anyone today, like someone that is claiming they're having an abduction experiences, and what they're hearing from?
I haven't spoken to anyone who claims to have been abducted. The whole abduction narrative in my mind is unfortunate, and it only arose after the early contactees in the 1950s, because you don't find stories of abduction among the early contactees. When they were getting so much attention, especially George Adamski, for their information and their message of hope and brotherhood, that's when this disinformation campaign apparently started, and that's when you begin to hear stories of abductions towards the end of the 1950s, and especially in the 1960s. And now it's a common part of the whole UFO phenomenon, it seems. I personally think that it is, and I understand there's many people who claim to have been abducted, and that it's an ongoing experience for many. I believe that either they are not taken against their wishes, and they've just come to call it abduction because it has been such a, you know, household term since the 1960s, or they have been having their experiences, and the experiences are real but are not connected to any activity by the space people, but rather by secret agents whose job it is to disqualify, to ridicule, to instill fear of the extraterrestrial presence, or, you know, some people, and let's be real about it, some people just have a very active imagination, and they think these things are happening to them. So there's various explanations for the abduction narrative, and I think it is very telling and very significant that you do not find stories of abductions until the information coming from the contactees started to worry the authorities because of their immense popularity.
Right, and they did. They had a great number of followers back then. Now, there is another thing that you hear a lot. I've heard this repeated many times, and I'm not sure where it originated from, but that there was a deal made with the U.S. government as far as abductions or hybrids or whatever it is in exchange for their technology. Have you looked into that claim at all?
I've come across it, and I think it's nonsense. So it's not about the evolution of humanity. It's not strictly about the evolution of the form, our form having evolved out of the animal kingdom, and the animal kingdom having evolved out of the vegetable kingdom, and the vegetable kingdom out of the mineral kingdom. Those are vehicles for the expression of consciousness, expression of life through the evolution of consciousness. And, you know, this evolution takes place throughout the universe. Scientists are still thinking that Earth is lucky in a way, in that the chemical balance of elements was conducive to life coming into existence here. But there is no part in the universe where there is no life. It's not always visible to our eyes, but if you have studied the wisdom teachings, you will know that life doesn't depend on dense physical forms for its expression. Above the three physical planes of existence, the dense physical and the liquid physical and the gaseous physical, there are four higher levels of physical reality called the etheric planes of matter, and these have been discovered by Wilhelm Reich, for instance, the Austrian physician who had to escape the Nazis and came to the United States only to be locked up by the FBI in the 1950s. He discovered orgone, what he called orgone, and which is basically those four higher planes of matter, which elude our range of vision, but they're real nonetheless. And it's on those higher planes of matter where life on the other planets takes place. So what we're dealing with is extraterrestrial life that hasn't evolved to our point of evolution yet, and extraterrestrial life that has gone ahead of our point in evolution. Earth, apparently, according to both the space people that visit us and the originators of the wisdom teachings, which are humanity's elder brothers who have evolved out of the human kingdom. As I said, you know, it's an evolution of consciousness, so it doesn't stop at the human kingdom. These are saying that Earth is in a particularly tricky point, tricky point of its own evolution as a planet, and therefore we are being protected. There are most other planets apparently have the ability to travel space, even if they're not entirely advanced as much as we have. This is to say that there have been visits from people with less lofty intentions, but for quite a while now we have been protected by the people from the higher planets who are more highly evolved than we are, and there is no way that extraterrestrials would have come here and struck a deal with the U.S. government or any other government to come and abduct people. Also, why on earth would people who have who have evolved to the point that they can travel, they have the technology that they can travel across space from planet to planet, or many people claim they come from outside our solar system. Why would they be so backward in biology? Why would they need to, and then, you know, you get the stories, because it gets wilder and wilder, you get the stories of hybrid races and they're dying out and they need to, I think it's a fantasy. And again, it's probably also part misinformation or disinformation to discredit the extraterrestrial presence.
Well, one of the things I think about every now and then is, okay, say we are being visited and we're being cared for. There's probably millions or even billions of planets out there in the universe that host intelligent life. You know, I mean, I'm only speculating, there's no way to know for sure. But just in that speculation, why would we be special? Why would we be protected? What's your opinion on that?
We are special in the same sense that every race on every planet, humanity throughout the universe is special. We are a certain clearinghouse in terms of the evolution of consciousness, where and this is getting a bit technical in the esoteric sense, the consciousness of life finds self-consciousness, and you know, this is all part of an enormous plan of evolution for the planet, for the solar system, for the galaxy, that perhaps we don't have time for today, and it will also perhaps be outside the topic of UFOs, etc. But we are not that special. In fact, you know, we've been messing up quite a bit on this planet. But because we're in such a delicate situation at the moment, we are being protected because these people from the other planets, and it is my understanding based on my research and my study of the teachings, that we are visited only by people from the neighboring planets in this solar system, because they see us as brothers and sisters, and they, you know, take the teachings from the great humanity's great teachers seriously, because they've gone through the same evolution. They see themselves as their brother's keeper, so they come here to protect us, so that we can make this transition safely into a new age, the cosmic age. You may have heard of the Age of Aquarius, mm-hmm. and that's just a term, to indicate that the solar system is making this movement along the heavens, and every 2,150 years, it aligns with the next constellation in the zodiac. And for the coming 2,150 years, more or less, that will be the constellation of Aquarius. And each of these constellations have a different energetic effect. And also, every cosmic age is inaugurated by a new teacher. You know, we all, and I'm going back to the wisdom teachings again, and that's why you know, this is a very important part of that connection with the field of ufology and the extraterrestrial presence. In fact, if you look back in history, you will see that every religion has come out of a certain set of teachings that was given to humanity by a great teacher. And it's not that the teachers came to found religions and create followers. That's what humans did with the teachings that they received, with the understanding that they had at the time, or maybe their motives to gain power over their fellow humans. But you know, we're talking about Krishna, we're talking about Buddha, we're talking about Hermes and Hercules, and we're talking about Jesus or the Christ as the inaugurator of the previous age, the age of Pisces. And this age too will be inaugurated by a teacher. And we also know that, you know, one of the traits that all religions share is that they all expect a new teacher. Christians are waiting for the second coming. The Buddhists are waiting for the fifth Buddha, Maitreya Buddha. The Hindus are waiting for the 10th incarnation of their god Vishnu. Some parts of Islam are expecting the 12th Mahdi, the Imam Mahdi. The Jews, of course, are still waiting for the Messiah. So it's a very universal concept. And in the teachings, it's called the doctrine of the coming one. And the coming one, this time, the teacher for the new age, comes at a time when humanity is making a breakthrough. I mean, we can see it around us. It's not just a matter of technology, but the world is coming together at a level that is, you know, that we haven't seen before, at least not in history as far as we know it. There's a long part of history that has gone unrecorded, at least by our historians. But the teacher is going to inaugurate the new age, and the ages wisdom teachings since 1875, given since 1875, have been given to humanity to prepare us for this time when we will be making this transition into, you know, some people call it an ascension, and there's all kinds of fanciful words, but what it comes down to is that we realize we are one human family, we have one planet that we are responsible for, and we have to clean up our mess if we want to survive, and we have to overcome our differences, which doesn't mean that we have to all start believing the same thing or saying the same things because we have our different cultural backgrounds, etc., but we need to overcome our differences in order, you know, through respect for our differences, to create unity in diversity. And that will be the only way to create a planet where everyone can live a fruitful life, developing the talents and everything, as long as everyone is ensured, is guaranteed the basic needs for life, adequate food, housing, education, healthcare. Those things need to be provided for everyone, not just for people who can afford it in rich countries, but across the world, around the world. And that will be the first step once, because I'm sorry, I keep going on, because that's okay. these things are all interrelated. What are we seeing in the world now? We see massive crises, not just on the environmental front. Look at the financial system, look at the economic system, look at education, look at our societies. You know,
countries, people starving. you know,
have been starving for decades. Mm. And what do we see now? We see the rich countries. America's building a wall in Mexico. Maybe they finished it already. There's the Mediterranean in Europe, dividing Europe and Africa. But, you know, people are taking to rickety boats and risking their lives every by the thousands every day, you know, and many hundreds every week drown. Because they're trying to get to a place where they've been told it's they will have at least have a chance for, you know, future prospects. And the same thing is going on in the, you know, on the other side of the world, in Australia, where many refugees from Asian countries are trying to find a better life for themselves and their families. There's no way back. You know, we have to. We're trying to continue in the old ways of, you know, well, competition is good, and the more wealth you create, the better it is, and you know, everybody needs to work for their keep, etc. But if we don't create a level playing field, because the playing field since 1945, since Bretton Woods, has been skewed to favor the rich countries, and especially the wealthy people in the rich countries. And in America now, you know, and increasingly also in Europe, to favor the large corporations, you know, and our civil liberties are at stake. So all these things converge to make us aware that, you know, we can't go on in the old ways. And we will, I believe, based on, you know, what economists are saying now and analysts, that we're about to experience a final crash of these systems that are now crumbling financially, economically, etc. And that will bring us back, humanity as a whole will bring us back to our senses. And that will sort of show our readiness or pave the way for the teacher for the new age to step forward and to show us, you know, there's hope. It's not the end of the world that the old systems are gone, because they were based on the notions from the previous age, and a new age is starting. And he will, you know, he's not going to, no one is coming to rescue us. The world teacher isn't, and the masters of wisdom aren't coming to rescue us or to save us. Neither are the extraterrestrials. They're all here in support of humanity that needs to come to its senses and start to make a decision to, you know, start to cooperate, create justice for everyone through sharing the world's resources, the world's food, the world's technology and knowledge and everything.
Yes, well, you know, I totally agree with the premise of all this, that it is totally needed for, you know, to save humanity and what we're possibly going through. But I want to step back a little bit to something I just heard you say a little while ago there, and that is from different planets in the solar system. Now, I know the contactees admitted that, but there's pretty strong scientific evidence that there's no way that any of our planets other than Earth in our solar system can support life. So I guess I would like to hear what your thoughts are on that. Are you still sticking to the contactees, Venusian, and, you know, all that stuff, or are you agreeing that it's impossible for life to exist there?
On the contrary, one of the things I said was that life doesn't depend on a dense physical form to express itself. So on our planet, and I understand that Earth is the only planet in our system where life expresses through dense physical forms, plants and animals and humans, etc. The same things we can find on other planets on the higher planes of matter, the etheric planes of matter. I mentioned Wilhelm Reich earlier. He discovered argon. And as I said, argon is really his amalgamated name for the four higher levels of matter, etheric matter. Semyon Kurlian developed a technology with which he could photograph the light, the energy fields around living tissue, living organisms, etc. Rupert Sheldrake, a contemporary British biologist, I believe, has put forward the hypothesis of morphogenetic fields. And more importantly, most importantly, science itself has admitted and has been struggling since the 1930s with the fact that 96%, no less, than 96% of the known universe cannot be measured, registered, seen by us, by our scientific minds and instruments, etc.
You're talking about dark matter and dark energy?
Well, that's what the science has called it.
Yes.
You know, but in all, it's 96% that they cannot that they cannot trace. So there must be something going on. And if you take these various scientists, Rupert Sheldrake, Wilhelm Reich, they were solid scientists in their fields, biologist and physician, medical doctor, Semyon Kurlian, and there was someone else whose name I forget now, and achievements. But if you put those things together, you know, they have a very strong case, the teachings, the Ages Wisdom teachings, which opposes, which suggests the existence of higher planes of matter, there's a very strong case for that if you look at those things. Even last year in June, there was a newspaper report. Let me see if I can accurately summarize it, that stated that astrophysicists have found that there is more light apparently around the universe that they can account for from known sources. So there's another strong hint. You know, so I think there's every reason to believe that those higher planes of matter, those etheric planes of matter which elude our vision, our field of our range of vision, are real, and that is where life on the other planets takes place. It also, conveniently, I think, explains or provides an explanation of how it's possible that flying saucers, UFOs, extraterrestrial craft manages to drop into our range of vision or drop out of it, you know, in an instant, in less than an instant. And I put to you that that is because they, existing on one of the or several of the higher planes of matter, the etheric matter, are able to, in their craft, to flick a switch and lower the rate of vibration of the atoms of which their craft and the bodies is made up, so that we can see it and flick the switch back when they've had enough or when they've got the attention of the people that they wanted to get the attention from, and disappear before our eyes. So, you know, these are all interrelated aspects of the extraterrestrial presence. And, you know, it explains a lot to me. And it also ties in with the notion of the evolution of consciousness. You know,
okay. So just a couple of questions. I'm probably going to be stuck on this planet thing a little bit. First of all,
sure.
So why would a higher plane of matter or life even want to stay on a planet like Venus? Why would they need a planet at all? And why would they travel in a flying saucer, say? And why would they have a body form if they wanted and not wanted?
We are so used to thinking in dense physical stuff. And because of that, you know, it's quite understandable. We're not familiar with the idea that forms also exist in higher vibrations on the etheric planes of matter. Some people go out and say it's different dimensions, etc. I wouldn't use that term. And if I can just add that, you know, it's very similar to our H2O, water. When the molecules of water start to vibrate at a lower frequency, it becomes solid and it becomes ice. When they begin to vibrate at a higher frequency than the liquid form, it becomes vapor. Yeah? So you have three different states of the same molecule. And the same apparently goes for atoms that our bodies are built of. Why do they live on the planet? Because life at our stage, the human stage, and all the stages below us, from the mineral upwards, and above us, the spiritual stage, it evolves on planets. Why on planets? Well, I know I can't look into the mind of the creator, but that's apparently that's the universal plan. You know, we see planets all over the galaxy and in other galaxies apparently. Why do they need to travel in spacecraft? Well, a lot of the work that they do here, that they come to do here, requires instruments and technology that they need their spacecraft for. For instance, the mopping up of the toxins and especially the radioactive waste that we spew out into the atmosphere through nuclear tests and nuclear power stations, which is very, very debilitating for the human constitution. So, you know, that's what they, for a very large part of their work, come in UFOs for. And at the same time, it is only the people who have gone ahead of the human stage in terms of evolution. Here on Earth, we call them Masters of Wisdom. George Adamski wrote about masters from Venus and Saturn that he met. Only at that stage is it possible to travel by thought and position yourself on another planet. That's something that's beyond our understanding and our grasp. But there are a lot of people who have not reached that advanced stage of evolution yet, also on other planets, who still come either as tourists, as visitors, or to work and live here for some time. And a lot also, of the UFO activity that we see is with regard to the cleaning up of our atmosphere and keeping our planet habitable in the current circumstances.
I know you're saying this is like a higher form of matter, but what would I'm still having a hard time here with why something would be attracted to an uninhabitable planet, and what type of evidence could possibly ever show that there is actually some type of form on planets?
Yes, it's funny because you see it as an uninhabitable planet, like Venus or Mars or whatever. It's uninhabitable at our rate of vibration, perhaps. I'm not sure because I haven't been there. But, science tells us that for bodies and forms, the physical forms that we are familiar with, human beings, Venus and Mars and the other planets are uninhabitable. But at the etheric planes of existence, so they are higher than the gaseous level, circumstances may be completely different. We don't know because we can't even see, science here doesn't even recognize the etheric planes of matter on our planets. And the forms that we, maybe I could try and explain it like this. The forms that we see, your body, the desk that you sit at, the plants that you see around you when you look outside, they are actually the precipitation of the blueprints on the etheric levels, which is where the hypothesis of morphogenetic fields comes in from Rupert Sheldrake. And so our planet is the exception in the solar system in that, the physical expression has come down to this very low frequency. On the other planets, they have the same etheric planes where these same forms exist, except it hasn't precipitated to the same low frequency that we have here on Earth. I don't know if that explains it a bit more.
Well,
but on those levels, there's no need for the oxygen that we have here, or the same chemical balance in the atmosphere and things like that.
Well, I don't know if you're going to take this offensive or not, but I'm not buying any of this. I'm not. I can't agree.
I'm not offended at all. I'm not offended at all. And you know, it's something that, I mean, if I don't know. You know, to me, it makes sense if the science itself says that it can't account for 96% of the known universe. It just can't account for it. If there are scientists like Rupert Sheldrake and Wilhelm Reich who come up with hypotheses, you know, that begin to give an explanation for that 96% of missing. Whatever it is, matter, or then I think it's a serious contender. What the Ages of Wisdom teachings say in terms of the etheric planes of matter, and Semyon Kurlian has developed this photographic technology to record energy fields that we don't see with our physical eyes. So you know, I personally don't mind if anybody buys it or not. You know, I'm putting it forward as what my research and my study has taught me. So
no, I do understand that there are many levels out there that humans can't see, can't realize by, like you're saying, by vibrations, by spectrums of light. There's all kinds of things that we just can't see that could be actually around us. But one of the things you said a little bit earlier, you were saying that one of the reasons they needed their craft, their saucer or whatever it is coming into the Earth's contact is mopping up radioactive waste or something. And what
yes.
Where did you get that from?
That's information that comes from the person who has, in my view, the latest installment of the most recent installment of the Ages of Wisdom teaching. I mentioned Madame Blavatsky. I mentioned Alice Bailey. Benjamin Krem has started talking about this subject and writing about it since 1974, 1975. His first book came out in 1979. He's also the person, an artist and esotericist, futurologist, from the UK, who has made it known that the world teacher for the New Age has been in the world since 1977 and is ready anytime now, once the crash happens, to make himself known. So he has, through his moment-to-moment contact with one of the Masters of Wisdom, also a lot of inside information, inside knowledge about the purpose of the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. In fact, Benjamin Krem himself, he wrote a book that mainly deals with this subject in 2010. It's called The Gathering of the Forces of Light, and it gives the full esoteric perspective. And in fact, in the 1950s, before he started being trained for his current mission, he was a contactee himself for a brief period and talked about the spiritual mission of the flying saucers and the space people in London, where he lived at the time and where he's still living. So that's he's the source for this information about the space people, the majority of the work of the space people here on Earth.
So you think that there's people, right, space people right now here on Earth working?
Absolutely. Yes, all the time.
Oh, well, let's hear about that. How and what are they doing? And
First of all, obviously, I think if you go back to the old scriptures, not just the Old Testament, but also the old Indian scriptures and other scriptures from around the world, the extraterrestrial presence has been a fact for millennia. They've always been here, you know, because everything is interconnected, not just on this planet, but also in the solar system. It's just that we have lost touch, not only with them, but through losing touch with ourselves and you know, with our real being, our true being, and with you know, the interconnectedness of humanity as the one race on this planet, we've lost contact with that reality of the extraterrestrial presence. So the extraterrestrials have been here all along, but especially since the discovery and invention of the atom bomb in the 1940s, and the the use of the atom bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they have taken up a major interest because this is potentially a weapon that could not just destroy the planet, the Earth, but that destroying the Earth would have a major upsetting effect for, you know, the balance in the solar system. So obviously they're very much concerned with that capability, and they have been doing everything that they can to help us get rid of it or to abandon it, to let go of it, which we haven't so far.
All right. Well, this has been very interesting to speak with you. And the book, again, is called Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. And I imagine you can find that on Amazon and a bunch of other places.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Gerard, do you have a website?
My website is bgapublications.nl. People can find my shenanigans there, interviews or talks. I'm coming to Loveland in Nevada in November for a talk. I've been invited, and I'm currently working on a new book that I hope will be out in October. And if I may just give a quick preview, in that book, in my new book, I will bring together all the information I've been able to find from the contactees, where they corroborate each other about how life on the other planets has been organized as sort of a show and tell or a teaching by example of, you know, alternatives for our modes of living.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, if all goes well during the music break right here, we'll be connecting to Grant Cameron. Hang in. Grant,
hello,
Cameron. Yes. How are you?
Just fine. Is this Martin?
It is. Yes, the one and only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, you were on quite a while ago, so you're a new guest to us. Now, people that listen to the Dark Matter Digital Network, they heard you just Monday night, was it, on Art Bell?
Monday night, yes.
Yeah. So, Grant, just to let you know, we're going to go for a little while here. We take a one music break, and we're going to take that in about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes, something like that.
Okay.
And then we'll come back on. But it's not a music break where we talk or anything like that. It's just a real quick break.
Okay.
So, Grant, I'd like to talk to you about different subjects, basically, than you spoke.
Yep.
On Art Bell's, but there was a couple of things you wanted to address more that you thought about them. Some questions that were asked of you. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. The one thing that I really hadn't thought about too much was this idea about evil aliens. A lot of people. It's actually the figures actually show. There's a big poll that was done by the organization, the Edgar Mitchell Organization. 1,200 experiencers filled out this survey, and in section 2, the question is actually asked of the experiencers, and the question is, do you believe the aliens are evil? And it's only 9.8%, less than 10% of the people actually believe the aliens are evil. And these are the people that are involved in the whole thing. And one of the questions that come up during Art's show was a question about cattle mutilations. And it didn't occur to me at the time, but basically cattle mutilations is something that's basically, it's not stopped, but it's pretty far down from what it was before. And this is one of the things I've actually lectured on, is what I call the alien pattern. That I've been in this since 1975. I've been in a long time. And I know that what happened in 1975 doesn't happen anymore. That basically we are almost like watching somebody turn the pages of a book. That this phenomenon is changing and changing. And cattle mutilations when I started in 1975 were absolutely horrendous. They were all over the place. There was ranchers with guns out in their field shooting at anything that was moving in the sky. There was huge numbers of cattle mutilations. It basically does not really happen anymore. I know of one case in Kansas City. It was either last year or the year before that outside the Kansas City airport. There was just one. I was just looking on the news to see cattle mutilations. There was one in June in Alberta, Canada. But basically, it doesn't happen anymore. And so this whole idea of cattle mutilations was raised, and it sort of indicates that, you know, these aliens may be evil. And so when I was thinking about it later, it occurred to me, if you actually look at it, I mean, if you are an alien and you can go through walls, and if you're an alien and you can see, they seem to be able to go into the future, go into the past, they seem to be able to appear as balls of light and turn into human beings or turn into physical beings, they have all this power to go through time and space. It doesn't appear to me that an alien from the other side of the galaxy is going to decide to come across the galaxy, mutilate a couple of cattle, and then go back home again. I think the cattle mutilation thing is extremely complex as to what's going on here, what kind of message. I believe it's a message they're sending. And even some of the latest postings, I just contacted Linda Howe. I haven't heard back from her. But Linda Howe is actually talking about the fact that it is 2013, that the complexity of the cattle mutilations has just increased exponentially in 2013, that some of these cows don't have brains and stuff that there's no way you could account for it by saying this was predators or stuff like that. So the whole idea of evil aliens really isn't supported by the data, and it's not supported by the experiencers themselves. This whole idea that there's some sort of evil force that's here to take over the world. And I even mentioned in some of my lectures, I talk about the fact that if you actually look at the experiencer data, which is what you have to look at, this data from the people who are actually encountering the phenomena, not from somebody sitting on the sidelines, but the people who are actually there every night when this is happening to them. If you look at their reports, you actually see that there's very, very little actually physical about aliens. You have a situation where they're telepathic. They can sort of appear as balls of lights and turn into beings. But if you take a look at some of the notions that are out there, that the aliens are here to steal the planet, get our gold and stuff. If you look at aliens, there's almost nothing physical. For example, if they're here to steal our gold, they don't have jewelry. Almost nobody. I don't think anybody's ever described jewelry. Nobody describes clothes. So, I mean, if they're going to take over the planet, what are they taking over? They really don't want anything on this planet because they don't have clothes. And if they do have clothes on, the experiencers will report that they're wearing uniforms and all the uniforms are the same. They don't even have chairs. There's a story, I don't know if you've ever had Brett Oldham on. No. He wrote the book called Children of the Greys. He's one of the very interesting ones who had the download, which I can talk about maybe in a minute, the download about the cancer cure. He's given the cancer cure by the aliens. And he talks about, he's a big guy. He's like 6'5", 6'6". He's a big, big, tall guy. And he talked about being forced to sit in the hallway on this little bench. And like, they don't have furniture. I mean, if you go onto an alien craft, I mean, you figure they would have like some nice leather couches. They have nothing.
Brett Oldham was,
yeah, he was forced to sit on this bench. And all the furniture in the craft, we know from experiencers, actually is part of the craft. It's molded into the craft. So he's sitting on this little tiny bench that he can barely even sit on because it's so small. And so there, you look at the aliens, they really have nothing of any sort of physical value. That, again, indicates that their role here is probably something that's not very physical. It's got something to do with something else, that they don't seem to be interested in physical material or doing physical stuff. And so those are the kind of things that I was thinking about after I was on Art's show, that I think these are significant things that people should know when you look at the data. And the data is actually very interesting when you start looking at the data produced by the experiencers as to you know, what interests them, this idea that 35% of all experiencers have had near-death experiences, which is very bizarre.
Wow.
For
I never
people.
Heard that. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Grant, before I forget, I'm going to be meeting you fairly soon. You're going to be at the Experiencers Peak, and that's what? That's August. I'm sorry, August 28th. Is it? Do you know the date?
Yeah, it's the. No, I mean, is it the weekend of the last weekend of August in Portland?
Yeah, in Portland, Maine.
And that's the big experiencer one. There's two real big experiencer groups. Well, there's actually three. There's Ciro, which is in Los Angeles. That's Yvonne Smith's group, and I've spoken to them. That's a fairly big experiencer support group. Then if you ever go to UFO Congress, which is in
Phoenix,
Arizona, they sort of started this experiencer support group thing. And when we first went, it started, they have it first thing in the morning because basically the people,
all right.
It's a very sort of anonymous thing. So it starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I know as a lecturer, the last thing you want as a lecturer to be is the guy that's lecturing at 9 o'clock in the morning because everybody's up till 3 o'clock in the morning talking to everybody. They're out at the bar or whatever. And nobody gets up for the first lecture. So if you're the first lecturer, you basically don't have many people there. But the experiencer thing actually starts an hour before the first lecture. It's at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the reason for that is they really don't want to be seen going to the experiencer event. And it's in a back room. And they're up to like 150 people the last time I saw. They have two rooms, which are standing room only. And you go in this room and there's people crying and they're very emotional about they've come from all over the country to tell their story because this is the first time they've found a place where they've got support for their experience. And the third event that Audrey Hewins putting on is this Experiencer Speak Conference in Portland. And she had this vision back a number of years ago. From this sort of the shining lady, we sort of call it sort of a inside story that she had this event where she is basically told to start this group, and this is the third big one, and it happens in Portland, Maine, and it's basically a conference for experiencers, and I'm honored that I'm going to be able to speak there and talk about my experiencer group here in Winnipeg, and I'm going to talk about downloads because one of the figures that I think is very important that doesn't get enough attention is that most people may not know that of all the people who are experiencers who filled out these 1,200 people who filled out the survey, and not everybody answered every question, but of the people who answered the question, it's question number 53 in part number one. It says, have you ever, do you have anything in the nature of scientific, technical, or mathematical material in your head that you did not get from going to school or from any other means? And 43% of experiencers will say, yes, I got that. And their people are getting downloads, what I call downloads. The aliens, for some reason, are sticking highly advanced material in people's heads. People are sort of like, these experiencers are like going to school. They're learning all this kind of stuff. And some of them are very dramatic. I had a woman, and unfortunately I missed her because I lectured at Contact in the Desert last month, and I had a woman after my workshop came up. There's a whole bunch of people, because once people know that you are supportive of experiencers and that you know about experiencers, I was inundated with these experiencers after my workshop. And one of the women hands me her phone, and she said, look what I got. And she said, I'm a secretary, and I got this 25-page scientific download, and it had formulas and all this kind of stuff. And she said, she mentioned some scientist who had checked it and said it made sense or whatever. And I said, can you please send me this? Can you, because I'd heard about these stories before. There's a couple of these stories of these 25, 27 page downloads that these people suddenly they're just sitting there and they're writing this stuff out. And she promised she would, but she never did. So you get this kind of stuff where people are getting virus. I know a guy, I can't out the guy, but I know who he is. He's at a university in Texas, got a download on how to kill viruses, whether it's the AIDS virus or the cold virus. And what it does is it encapsulates the virus. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts. He's telling me, this research doctor, it came from aliens. He told me about his alien experiences. His daughter actually helps me run my experiencer group here in Winnipeg, and she's a medical trained doctor. And so you get these guys. I have a guy, a former NASA engineer, who put an experiment. Again, I can't out the guy, but put an experiment on the space shuttle. And very dramatic experiment. And they said, no, we're not putting this on here. This is garbage. Never going to work. And he got this idea, this download. And finally, he got some scientists to sign off on it. They put it on the space shuttle, and it worked. And he sold his company for reported $100 million, he and his partner. And he told me, he said, Grant, that idea came in my head that morning. The last thing I remember that night was a hooded figure standing at the end of my bed. So this is, I think, very important. I mean, and this is what I'm going to talk about at the Experiencer conference in Maine. I'm going to talk about these downloads and dramatic stuff like cures to cancer. And so the whole point is, what do you do if you get this kind of stuff? To me, it's much more important than chasing sightings. It's much more important than what the government knows or whether they're going to tell us or whatever. These people have got material that they're being given, and I think we should try to figure out why they're being given this material. And is anything that they have of legitimate benefit?
Wow.
And because I mentioned that one with Brett Oldham. I don't know if you're going to go with the break or we can.
We're going to go with the break. And I hope you don't take offense at this, but did you have a double latte before the show?
Yes, I talk fast.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get used to it. That's fine. I love getting a lot of information, so this would be great. But no, we'll take a break in just a minute here. I wanted to say to the live listener out there, you can jump over to the chat room, which is at podcastufo.com. And also, this is a call-in show if you'd like to call in. Some people do every once in a while. That's 603-967-4030. So, Grant, just before we take a quick break here, are you taking a little bit of a break from, you were known for the president's UFOs. Are you still active in that? And if so, we can talk about it in the second hour. I just wanted to ask that quick question.
Oh, I still follow it. I don't think it's as important as Experiencer stuff, but I do follow it. And I do have, my book is back in line. I have a presidential UFO book that was supposed to come out about 10 years ago, was contracted in New York. It never did come out. But it's back on track again, and we may be going with it.
Oh, great. Do you have a working title for that book?
It was Presidents and UFOs, but somebody else did just put out a book with the same title.
It's going to be
different, but it's basically going to have UFO in the title, and it's the stories of the presidents, but it'll move. It's very interesting stuff with the presidents knowing who has seen UFOs and all that kind of stuff. It's extremely interesting stuff.
Yeah, I'd really like to talk about that a little
sure.
bit in the second hour. Okay, so hang on. And the podcast listener, if you want to listen to the entire show, you can support the show for only $1 a month or more right on our website. You can see that at podcastufo.com. Just to let you know, the support does really help. Like, for instance, last week when I was down to Ray Stanford's down in Maryland, that was all out of pocket, three nights in a hotel, all that stuff. So it really does help. As a matter of fact, I'd love to do more shows on the road like that. So next week we have Richard Souter on. He's going to be talking about his book. I want to thank everyone for helping out tonight. Our guests, of course, our two guests, that is, Gerard Artson and Grant Cameron. And I also want to thank Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for the music, Peggy for managing the Facebook page. Remember, you can like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. And that'll do it. So we'll see you next week right here on the Dark Matter Digital Network, or if you're listening on the podcast at podcastufo.com. Thanks a lot, and keep your eyes to the sky.